This is Earl Speedo Carroll of the Cadillacs, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Little Anthony of Little Anthony Imperials, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guest tonight a pop legend and a man who has a love affair with his audience, Mr. Mel Carter. How you doing, Mel?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I just want to say that I had the pleasure of working with you a few times, and I know what your vocal prowess is, but to watch you close up and personal from the side of the stage and to see how you take over that stage and command your audience is just a pleasure, to the point where we all ran back down around and sat in the back so that we could catch the whole show. I've worked with many, many people over the years, but you just have a lot of fun up there and you just take control, and I love it.
Thank you for that.
Absolutely. You were born in Cincinnati, correct?
Cincinnati, Ohio. Yes, I was.
Cincinnati had an awful lot of talented people in that area, as a matter of fact. And it had some great baseball teams, you know, Mel?
Cincinnati used to be the premier team when I was growing up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I remember, I was a big Yankee fan. So, you know, if the Yankees, I think the Yankees played Cincinnati twice, and I think Johnny Bench played in those days, so.
Well, even before Johnny Bench, they had the big red machine, and
oh yeah,
I lived not too far from the park, the original park that was in Cincinnati.
So you,
us kids, get the balls that came over the fence.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's funny. I went to the stadium so much, and my father took me there when I was a kid. He actually took me to Don Larson's perfect game. But I went so much, and I actually caught so many balls that I have them in a basket here, and people don't believe, because sometimes you go, you don't catch anything.
Right.
But, you know, I had a lot of fun with them, and as hard as it is to do that, I'm still a Yankee fan, because they make it tough. You know what I mean? But it's all good. Hey, listen, I still think it's the American pastime, and I played when I was a kid, you know, so it's a real good game.
It's the game. If you're really, really interested in baseball and time of the year in October, that's baseball.
I sit there and my wife says, how can you hang on every pitch? It's so boring. I say, I'm sitting here saying he's got a guy on second, he's got two outs, and it's 1-1. What's he going to throw on this pitch? Because I really get into it. My wife can't understand that. Nor can a lot of other people.
No, I think because they feel like the game is too slow. But
yeah.
In this instance, you find out why they pay the big bucks to the people.
I hear you. I understand. So growing up in Cincinnati, as a matter of fact, you know, Ohio, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is there. And I found out that only certain airlines fly into to Cleveland because my wife and I were supposed to go as guests of Terry Stewart, and she had a kidney stone operation the night before we were supposed to get on the plane. She had some symptoms, so we canceled the trip, and, you know, we haven't gotten a chance to do that, but I found out that only certain airlines fly in. It's very tough to get in there.
Into Cleveland?
Into Cleveland.
That's where the Hall of Fame is.
Oh, yeah.
I think because in that area, is the hub, Delta Airlines is the hub. So probably they exclude other airlines.
Yeah, well, I think Continental goes in and not too many others. Years ago, I was on a show called The Upbeat Show from Cleveland, Ohio. Do you remember those people?
No.
It was Jeff Koutesh and the Upbeat
Dancers.
Yes,
I do. Yes, I do.
Upbeat.
He later went to Vegas and had a show there in one of the casinos.
Yeah, Jeff Koutesh. That had to be 35 years ago. Easy. But I remember it was from Ohio, and I remember we didn't get it in New York. But I was saying, I'm going to be in the Upbeat Show. People would say, what? Clay Cole? No. The Upbeat Show. Mel, was your family into music when you were a child? From what I understand, you started singing at a very early age.
No, my mother was a singer. And my father whistled
uh-huh.
in a group. We have you know, a very musical family.
Right.
Two cousins, the Fairbanks twins, were in gospel, Phil.
Right.
One of my cousins used to be with the Earth, Wind, and Fire, Sheldon Reynolds.
Wow. Love that group.
So, you know, various members throughout the family are musical, but I guess I got it from my mother.
Because it usually comes from somewhere, and, you know, a lot of times I talk to people, I say, so did your parents push you into music? And they say, no, actually, I just opened my mouth one day and I started singing. But I heard a story about you as a very, very young child, and I had a similar experience, actually, is that you were coaxed up to a Penny Arcade microphone when you were a young guy, and that was actually your first recording experience.
Yes, it was my aunt. Not my grandmother, right? Took me to the Penny Arcade.
Wow.
And they had those direct disc machines.
Right.
And it's 25 cents. You put it in, and we made a record called Me and the Devil Had a Tussle. You Know I Won.
Wow.
And I think I still have that.
No kidding.
That record around here. I saw it some years ago, but I thought I still had it.
I think collectibles would probably be interested. You know, you can if give it to collectibles, you'll make 0.0005% of nothing.
You know, throughout my when I started singing, I started singing when I was like 4 years old,
right?
And then at six, I was on a television show, Betty and the Boys.
Betty and the Boys.
On the WKRC in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Wow.
They used to sit me on top of a piano and sing. How I got there, I will never know. That somehow I was doing that show at, and then at nine, throughout the at different times, at nine, I was singing with Lowell Hampton's band.
Wow.
The vocalist there then was Little Jimmy Scott. That's when I first met Little Jimmy Scott.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lionel had that big smile. I mean, you know, you must have, when you look over there, I mean, it was nothing but, you know, hey, we're having a good time.
Yeah, they had a movie, the movies.
Right.
And then you had the stage shows.
Right.
And they also had contests on Saturday, you know, like a singing contest. And if you won the contest, one of your prizes was that you got to work with the artist that was appearing there.
Oh, wow.
That week. That week it happened to be Lionel Hampton.
Unbelievable.
And I got to sing with Lionel Hampton.
Unbelievable. I wonder if Betty and the Boys are still around.
I don't think so. I don't know how long that program lasted.
I don't know. She's probably on Facebook, but I don't know. That might be a different Betty.
But I remember the name was Betty and the Boys.
Yeah, wow. Unbelievable. So you started at a really early age.
Yes.
Man, that's fabulous. Did you get involved with street corner groups? There must have been a bunch around in Cincinnati in those days.
I can't remember the name. Otis Williams and the Charms.
Uh-huh.
I did remember the name. The mind is working today.
Wow.
Williams and the Charms. There was a guy in there named Lonnie Carter.
Uh-huh.
Lonnie Carter always took him to be like family because we had the same last.
Absolutely.
And they lived in Walnut Hills.
Right.
We lived in Avondale. And people in Avondale, you didn't venture off into Walnut Hills.
I remember that group. That was a great group.
Otis Williams and the Charms?
Yeah.
Yes, they were good.
Absolutely.
They were good.
Yeah.
So that was the street corner symphony that I wasn't a part of the group, but, you know,
right.
in terms of singing out on the corner, that's what we used to do.
Yeah, we all had them. I did them. And then they used to chase us. They used to say, oh, come on, Maguire Sisters, move along. As a matter of fact, Dion always tells me that they really didn't sing on Belmont Avenue. They got chased. You know, people would say, shut up, Ashpet, you know, shut up. And they'd move down, and they actually sang on Arthur Avenue. They really didn't sing on Belmont, even though they took the name. But, you know, that's the way it was in those days, man. They moved you along. Your relationship with Quincy Jones was a special relationship, from what I understand. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I met Quincy right after I left In 1957,
uh-huh.
The first record that I had, first national record that I had was I Need You So.
Right.
It was under, with Quincy Jones.
Right.
And we had done, you know, like in those days you did a certain amount of recordings for a company
before right.
they would release any one particular one.
Right, I get you.
And Quincy really held out. He thought that I was going, he felt that I was going to be somebody to be reckoned with.
Right.
And the first record that came out was that, you know, the Ivory Joe Hunter tune.
Right.
You Saw?
Mm-hmm.
That was a hit in 1957.
Wow.
Then he started using me to do film things, film scores.
Uh-huh.
Banning was one of the films that I did.
Right, right, okay.
I don't remember the name of the tune, but I know the film. That's now, isn't that strange? I can remember the name of the film and not the name of the song that I did from this.
I think I remember the movie, too.
And when it was almost time for me to leave, he kept talking to the people at Mercury that you should keep this guy, you should keep this guy, you should
wow.
keep this guy. And I went from Mercury, came out to the West Coast, and hooked up with Sam Cooke.
Right, and we'll talk about that actually in a couple of minutes. So I guess my real big question is, so did you meet Peggy Lipton from the Mod Squad?
No, he wasn't married to her then.
Oh, okay. So that was before, and
yeah.
then there was Peggy, and then there wasn't Peggy, and then he moved on to other things.
Oh, that was during the days when he, well, I'm not sure, but I think he was dealing with Dinah Washington.
Right. Well, he touched so many things, Quincy. And, I mean, you know, what a talent Quincy was. I mean, to be connected to him in that way early on is a really great start because, I mean, where do you go from there?
Where do I go? There were some great people that I was associated with.
Uh-huh.
I got to say that he was one of the premier persons. I like to consider myself as pre-Michael with him.
No, I understand what you're saying, you know, and but, you know, I'll tell you, I always have a theory that, you know, if you're playing basketball, you always try to play with the guys that are taller than you and older than you. Mm-hmm. And if you're learning any kind of a sport or any kind of a situation, always hang out with the guys that are a notch above you. So I'm sure that a lot of Quincy rubbed off early on, and you took a lot of things with you, just even recording-wise or microphone-wise or just spiritually,
mm-hmm.
you know, musically and spiritually.
Well, I would say that the whole experience was a growing experience for me.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You did some gospel work, too, I understand. And I gather, just by speaking to you and being in your presence, that you're a pretty spiritual guy.
Yes, yes.
That actually is quite apparent when somebody's in your presence. Tell me about Sam Cooke. Now, Sam signed you to Derby Records, right?
He signed me to Derby. And
right.
I knew when I got to LAC, I knew Sam from being on the road. I was on the road with the Raymond Raspberry Singers and Robert Anderson.
Uh-huh.
And he was with the Soul Stirrers. And we used to travel in those gospel packages, very much like the rock and roll packages. Or the
right.
Well, we were out on the road, and it was like many different groups that right. travel in these gospels.
Like like a package or a review.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we called it packages because it was a gospel. The reviews are the connotation there would be with R&B or
gotcha. Okay.
And I knew him then. So when I got to California, like I said, in those days, what you had to do, and that wasn't the first record label that I went to.
Uh-huh.
You went to a label.
Right.
Offices, and you sang live.
Been there, done that.
Okay. First record label that I was with was in California was Doris Day's.
Oh, label, interesting.
Arwen Records.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go there and do an audition.
Wow.
And she happened to be there that day.
Unbelievable.
And I went there to sing, and she told Marty Melcher.
Right, Marty Melcher, right.
So the first record that I had, and that was a hit, a minor hit, I'm Coming Home.
Right.
is written by a guy from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm coming home because I've been so all alone. I hope that you'll understand I'm in your command. That's why I'm coming home. I've been away a year and a day. Yes, I've been so alone since I have kissed you. Oh, how I've missed you.
That, when I left there, I somehow calling and getting with Sam.
Right.
Going up to the office at SAR Records. And first out of the, right out the box,
right,
was the fact that Sam had written When a Boy Falls in Love.
Right.
And there was nobody at the label who could sing as many words to a phrase as he could.
I see.
Nobody else but me.
Uh-huh.
And that was the reason I got the song.
I've heard them say love is a wonderful thing, something you can't hide on a shelf. But to me, they no longer have to explain, because I know for myself. He awakens each morning with a smile on his face when a boy is in love. And the world to him is a beautiful place when a boy is in love. He's up and he's gone, there's no breakfast for him, cause he lives on the love of his sweet little Jen. The day is not through, though it's not very long, before he must talk to his girl on the phone. That's how it is when a boy falls in love. His girl's voice on the phone brings him wondrous delight when a boy falls in love. If there's been any darkness, it all fades from sight when a boy is in love. He can hardly wait till the moment they meet, for he knows when he sees her, his day will be complete. When they're finally alone and he kisses her lips, the world sings a love song and his heart turns a flip. That's how it is when a boy falls in love. At the end of the day, the time comes they must part. The strings of regret tear away at his heart. And late in the night, as he sleeps on his bed, visions of the sweet charms, how they dance through his head. And before you know, he's buying a ring to capture forever that sweet darling thing. That's how it is when a boy falls in love.
Song, it was the first pop hit on an R&B label. And okay, the history was that it was the first black-owned company that had a pop record emerge out of it, you know, and broke through the English invasion.
You're right. I will tell you something, you know, just in keeping in line with that whole subject, a good friend of mine, I was a dean in the Bronx for 30 years in a very tough school, and I had Jimmy Keys' kids, Jimmy Keys from the Chords, real gentleman, and I knew him right up until the day that he passed away. And he used to tell the story about, he wrote Shaboom, you know, and Shaboom really died on the R&B charts. The Crew Cuts covered it, had the hit on the pop charts, but they were very much separated for a long, long period of time. You know, the R&B group had their stuff, and the pop group had their stuff, and it didn't cross over too often.
Well, then, when you were black, you had to go through the R&B department anyway in order for it to cross over to the white. But this actually went pop.
Gotcha.
It broke, you know, a first record out the gate from the Derby Records was created as a pop label from the Sar Records.
And it was a UK hit as well.
Yes, it was.
You know, and ladies and gentlemen, Mel Carter is very popular in the UK. I mean, they just love Mel Carter in the UK. They did then, and they do now. This I know is a fact.
And I can still sing that song in the same key.
Which is great.
I do sing in the same key. It's high, though.
Well, you know, let me tell. Well, hi for you. I mean, you know, like I say, I stood about 25 feet away from you when you were doing your highs, and you tend to, you know, fool around a little on stage and play with the melody, and a lot of times you just go up there, and everybody backstage goes, "Oh my goodness." From there, after A Boy Falls in Love, what happened after that? There were quite a few tunes after that, I know.
We had quite a few releases on Derby Records, a couple of others, and then we had an album. And what happened is that the contract was up.
Uh-huh.
And
gotcha.
Nobody in the office realized it, so they didn't re-up.
Huh.
And it was time for, we had the opportunity to go to Imperial Records.
Okay.
And so then we had a meeting with Sam.
Zelda Sands, right?
Yeah, was my manager.
Uh-huh.
She also ran the office there at Sam's label. And we had a meeting with Sam, and he said, "Well, look, you know, like, he's a great guy.
Right.
He could have helped me, but he said, you know, I would never let it be said that I would be the person that would stand in your way."
Wow.
And he gave me his blessing. We went on to Imperial Records. And the first record was a minor chart hit called The Richest Man Alive.
Uh-huh.
Clouds of cotton play in the skies of blue, and the changing seasons make the old tunes new, and the rains come down just to kiss the earth. Let me tell you what this is worth. The miracle of love, the love we get from heaven. Like the miracle of love, the love I get from you. Your love opened up my eyes, and I realize I'm the richest, richest man. Because my heart is where it belongs. A different place ever since I kissed your smiling face. Love is in the air.
And then the second thing was Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me.
Right.
And then that started a whole chain of hits after that.
Just hold me, hold me. Make me tell you I'm in love with you. Thrill me, thrill me. Walk me down the lane where shadows will be. Hiding love is just the same as will be, will be. They told me, be sensible with your new love. Don't be fooled, thinking this is the last you'll find. But they never stood in the dark with you, love. When you take me in your arms and guide me slowly out of my mind. Kiss me. Say adieu, so kiss me, make me tell you I'm in love with you. Kiss me, kiss me, when you do, I know that you will miss me, if we ever say adieu, so kiss me. Kiss me, make me tell you I'm in love with you. Never, never, never let me go. Never, never, never let me go.
Well, let's talk about Hold Me, Thrill Me, as long as you brought it up. I mean, here's a song that actually has a life of its own. It lives, it breathes. It's the ultimate love song. It's the song that all women love to dance with their man to. It's got to be really a kick to be the one that owns that tune. And when I say own the tune, I mean the one who gets to sing it over and over and over again.
Actually, it is a female song.
Uh-huh.
Because guys don't usually normally say, hold me, thrill me, kiss me.
I got you.
Prior to that, in the 1952, I think it was, Karen Chandler had a hit with it.
Uh-huh.
And before that, I think Sonny Teal and the Oreos had it and did it as a doo-wop tune.
I had the pleasure of working with the Oreos during one of Ronnie I's shows, you know, UGHA. Years ago and whatever, and of course they did Crying in the Chapel and whatever, and they had some of the original members who were actually, I think one of them was the bass, he was playing stand-up bass, but he was an original Oriole, I think he was 81, and he was on stage, it was just amazing. I think they started in probably around 1942. I think 1946,
think so.
Yeah, you know, and they, because a lot of people don't realize that the Orioles, the Ink Spots, I mean, by the time the Platters came along, they just covered what the Orioles and the Ink Spots did. They had all those tunes.
Well, a lot of the, like,
right.
Ravens.
Right.
The Spaniels.
Right.
All of those, you know, they were the R&B groups. Therein lies what we were talking about a minute ago.
Right.
If you were black and you had songs, they were minor hits, and then the white artists came along and did the same thing, and they were like,
phew. Right.
I think the music then, when we were talking about it, it wasn't R&B, but it was called race music then.
Right. Well, you know, and that's another whole subject, and we'll talk about that too. I'm very friendly with Lala Brooks, and Mary Wilson's a good friend of mine, and Mary actually told me a couple of great stories about being on tour and what happened on the bus and off the bus. And I'm sure you were there for some of it, because you were with Dick Clark's Cavalcade of Stars at one point. And, you know, you were right there in the thick of it, which is an amazing thing. The Ruth Lyons Show, is that something from your past?
That was a TV show that was maybe a tri-state, you know, like Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky.
Right.
And Ruth Lyons was very, 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 very big.
Right.
I mean, like people like Rosemary Clooney and her sister and all of those used to come up from Kentucky to be on that show.
Right. So here we have Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, and here it is, such a big hit, you know.
I'm thankful to have a signature song like that.
Oh.
And that I have the definitive version of it. And I got to tell you a story.
Sure.
I thought myself to be a jazz singer prior to doing pop records.
Right.
Meaning that I always sung and I hung behind the beat and, you know, laid over and thought I was really cool, right?
I got you.
But when we did Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, I had to be directed sing on the beat. The only time they gave me any kind of release was in the bridge.
That must have been tough, so they wouldn't let you scat.
No. They wouldn't let me sing. I had to sing on the beat.
I hear you.
I know. To take no liberty or anything like that. And the arranger, Nick DeCaro, that was his first arranging job.
Wow.
And isn't that incredible that the string sweep to Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me is the most recognizable string sweep on any record ever?
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you.
It was all like magic. We were put together for that.
I'm going to tell you this, and I told you this a couple of days ago. We have a 57 Seberg jukebox in our house, and Paulette, usually when we come in and have coffee, we have two choices. We either turn on the TV and watch the news, or we snap on the jukebox, and she runs over there and she starts hitting the buttons. And I will tell you that Mel Carter starts that day almost every day. It's either Band of Gold, which is Paulette's favorite tune, and we'll talk about that tune, or it's Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me. So in my house, that tune gets played probably 11, 12, 13, 15 times a week, both of them. So, you know, I mean, you're a hit in my house every day. True story.
I hated the song when we first recorded it.
No kidding.
When they brought it to me to do, like I said, I thought it was corny. I thought the way they had me singing was awful. And little did I know.
Yeah,
and,
but you know, corny works. Corny works sometimes, you know.
Somebody said, you know, the color of corn is gold.
Right.
And so now you see.
Unbelievable. All right, so when you walked out of the studio that day, you were shaking your head and you were going, I don't know, what did I just do?
Well, the whole session, you were under the guidance of an A&R person, and that's what you did.
Did you do it on one take?
No, I think we had six takes.
Yeah, because, you know, in those days...
Because of me. then we had Dave Pell. Remember Dave Pell?
Yes.
Was the controller. And so when you were in the studio, like you had a certain amount of hours to go, and Dave was right there. That cutoff time clip.
Right.
So you had to be ready. And you know what's different about recording then to recording now?
Oh, I could write a book. Go ahead. I want to hear your version.
When you went into the studio, you knew everything.
Oh.
The arrangement was...
Absolutely.
The singers were there.
Now guys go in and they rehearse for 4 hours.
And you're writing as you're going along.
Right.
You go in and it was live. Everything was live. We didn't track anything.
We were live.
You know, sometimes you would have like 30 pieces in there with 12 singers and clockwise you'd get it done.
Well,
people like a year and you're talking, look what I've done in a year. What are you talking about in a year? In a year you should have had like 6 albums out.
That's right. I was down in Midtown And really, it was Maynard Ferguson's orchestra. Mike Abeen was the piano conductor. And we're in there with about 21 pieces, strings, horns, with a group that I had years ago. It was on MGM Records. And we're playing all through this thing. And the take was fabulous. Everybody was on. It was everybody was feeling good. Just towards the end, the drummer dropped the stick. And you could hear it go, you know. And it wasn't, he wasn't one of these drummers that had like three spare sticks lined up in front of him,
right,
you know, where they stick them out of the side of the drum thing. Like guitar players have another pick, you know, stuck in the, you know. He dropped it and everybody went, ah, damn it, you know, whatever, whatever. And then there was one part in one of the tunes. I think we did about six tunes that day. There was one part where Mike Abeen decided to change the chord to a major seventh, but we were singing a straight major harmony. And I kept saying, it clashes, man. Why did you change that chord? Because it's clashing. It's really rubbing against what we're singing. And the guy who was producing the record, Gino Moretti, he says, nope, we're not doing it again. You know, we got to move on to the next one. And I was so mad because when it came out on the record, as soon as I heard it come along, I said, oh, man, my eyes were like crossing when I heard it. But
we had the thing about it is, uh-huh, you had the artist.
Right.
You knew your material.
Right.
You knew it. You didn't guess on it or try to create. The creation came when you were in the studio,
right,
and heard the musicians.
Right.
The thing that's great for me is when it's live.
Spontaneity.
And you hear the different sections.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you can hear different sections and movements. And vocally, you can take something from that and make, you know, add it.
Absolutely.
Make it different. But the difference is that the addition that you would add to it to make the creativity, oh, man, it's like, it's, I cannot tell people what it feels like to be in a studio with live musicians.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Even on stage as opposed to tracks. I mean, you know, even though, you know.
On stage, you know, like, there's nothing better,
right,
than a band kicking you in the butt and making you work.
Right, because you play off of each other. And, you know, so something that you said about the studio, mm-hmm, is when you're in there with the live band, you're actually doing a performance. It's not just,
right,
you know, because you've already got your chops down. You already know where it's going. But then with all that energy, you take it to another place.
Yeah, but not only that, when you know, like in rehearsals, pre-rehearsals, before you go into the studio and you were just doing it with the piano, and
right,
then the piano, the arranger is playing, well, this is going to be happening there, this is going to be happening there. Okay, you can imagine.
Right.
But then when you get into the studio and you hear it,
uh-huh,
it takes you to another level.
Yeah, it resounds and you're inside of it. You're inside of it. It's not just, that's the way it is. Well, you know, there's a delicate balance between the orchestra, the performer, the engineer. There are a lot of vocalists nowadays that cannot do that. They're pretty mechanical, and if they didn't have their engineer in there with them, they'd be stuck. You know what I'm saying? But
I understand that, but I know when you got good musicians and they can play your charts, and the charts are sounding the way they're supposed to be sounding, they can make you work.
I understand.
It can make you work as a performer. And, I mean, there's a level of performance that you always have. I'm from that school where there is that performance. But when something exciting is going on behind you, it takes you to another level.
Well, then again, when you start off with Quincy Jones, and you know, and that's where you've set the bar, and then, you know, you go on to other sessions. You know, you had just a bunch of guys, and you had very, you know, with the doo-wop thing, you had not a heck of a lot of instrumentation. But on other sessions, you had, like, I find it funny. I spent my time with the Mystics, and on the original record, Hushabye, people say, who was doing that guitar riff on Hushabye? It's just arpeggios. It goes through the tune. It was Al Caiola. I mean, they didn't kid around. They could have gotten anybody to do that. You know, at that time, he was, Al Caiola was one of the best studio guitar players in the country.
Right.
But, you know, that was the caliber of the people that you had. Or Jimmy Wright on sax, or, you know, these kind of people who, very distinct sounds when you listen to the record, you know. You're not just getting a vocal orgasm, so to speak, but the music is also turning you on big way as well.
I think I'm pretty fortunate to have been mentored by such great people from an early age on.
Right.
And then as going and having established the musical career that I have, being able to have the association with some great musicians.
Right.
Now, as now as well as then. I mean, you know, like, I still get excited from being on stage with certain musicians.
Oh, I understand.
And I have the highest respect for musicians.
Well, let me ask you something. When you're at a sound check and everything and you're working with a group, can you actually go over to the piano and say, hey, man, I want you really to lean on that B-flat minor over here, or do you not have a point of reference? In other words, is it in your head, or do you have a musical instrument that you can use as a point of reference?
If I'm at a sound check,
right,
and my charts are usually, you know, they're written for even if you don't know how to play.
In other words, a couple of your charts are straight ahead charts. You know, very basic.
They're all written, but if there's something that I like what somebody's doing, something I say, you know, like you have to be able to be a good player to play them.
Right, I hear you.
So therefore, if you're doing something that I like and I hear in the background, and I'll say, hey, I like that. Why don't you keep it? I also can hear when you're doing something wrong.
Right.
I don't get on people when they're when you do something wrong, because
yeah.
I know that we're all, as to me, when we're on stage, we're a unit.
Right.
Even though I'm in front, we're still a unit. And what goes on in the back is the enhancement that was going to make me be comfortable.
Right. But I would be willing to bet an awful lot of money that if for some reason the band went deaf, dumb, and blind, you could get out and sing Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me a cappella and get the same reaction that you do when you do it full tilt.
Hold me, hold me, never let me go until you've told me what I want to know, and then just hold me, make me tell you I'm in love with you. Thrill me, thrill me, walk me down the lane where shadows will be, hiding lovers just the same as will be. When you make me tell you I love you. They told me, be sensible with your new love. Don't be fooled, thinking this is the last you'll find. But they've never stood in the dark with you, love. When you take me in your arms and drive me slowly out of my mind, kiss me, kiss me. And when you do, I know that you will miss me, miss me. If we ever say adieu, so kiss me, kiss me, make me tell you I'm in love with you.
Kiss me,
kiss me, kiss me. When you do, I know that you will miss me, miss me. If we ever say adieu, so kiss me, kiss me, make me tell you I'm in love with you.
You know how it is. I mean, you know, but, you know, one of my pet peeves really is, you know, you send your charts ahead and you're doing the gig. Now, if it's a Mel Carter night, then, you know who's coming in the band, whatever. But if you're on the bill with a lot of different players and the sound check is from 11 to 5 in the afternoon and, you know, these guys have all these charts in front of them, a lot of times these guys do not look at the charts until they get to sound check and they're supposed to have been reviewing them for 3 weeks. And that's one of my pet peeves, because it's like, you guys didn't look at the charts, did you? No. Okay, let's get busy, you know.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing that you have to deal with when you're dealing with doing the package shows now.
Yeah, you know? I know.
There's not enough time, I don't think. And I don't think that the people invest enough money in the musicians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I understand. Well, you know, nowadays, even with the budget being the way it is and everything else, everybody's looking to cut back wherever they can.
But it's a musical show.
Right.
Why would you skip on the music?
I hear you loud and clear.
No, that's the dumbest thing. Oh. You know, why would you skip on the music and it's a musical show?
Hey, listen, all I can say is that Mel Carter deserves the Nelson Riddle Orchestra every time he goes out. So forget it. That's who should be backing you every night that you go out, because you deserve that. Not everybody does.
You know, like you, the thing about it, I can tell when you get there.
I
remember working in Bermuda.
Right.
And there was a guy, this big band, and he was saying that he would give me all his credits and everything like that.
Right.
So I turned to my manager. I said, you know, this is going to be a hard thing. Mm-hmm. But when they have to give you all the credits before.
Right.
I said, and sure enough, mm-hmm. rehearsals was like, oh, it was the most painful
thing
I've ever been through. And so then you think, okay, how am I going to make this work? I know how to make this work,
uh-huh.
you know, and you utilize the different things that you have on stage and make it work. I don't know.
Right. No, you're right. But every day is different, and that's part of being creative and knowing how to do it. You know, like you see what you got in front of you, and you just do the best you can with it. I think back one time we did a show, and it was with Lala Brooks and the Crystals. These guys were doing a sound check and everything, and I was just sitting in the auditorium minding my own business. She was getting so frustrated, and I got so annoyed, I actually ran up the stairs, grabbed the guitar out of the guitar player's hands and looked at him in the eyes and said, watch. And I started playing him the chords, you know, because I'm playing guitar since I'm like 8 years old. You either hear those changes or you don't. I don't care about the charts. On a lot of the hits, you got to hear it as well. You know the chart, but,
right.
but you know, you got, if you know the music, you're way ahead. And I played, I said, just watch me. And I'm playing and I'm playing. He just goes, oh, I got it. And I handed him back the guitar, but I'm saying to myself, it annoys me when you have such big talent on stage and you're not taking care of business with the guys that you have backing it up.
I know you've heard or may not have heard a lot of stories how I got to be into the doo-wop thing on the PBS shows.
Yes, I've heard a few different stories. Why don't you tell me and the rest of
tell
the listeners?
A story. His
right.
father,
T.J. Lubinsky.
T.J. Lubinsky's father.
Savoy Records.
Was at Savoy Records.
Correct.
When I came there as a teenager to sing with a group called the Raymond Raspberry Singers.
Ah.
And he remembered me.
No kidding.
I kid you not.
You're talking about T.J. or his father?
No, his father.
Uh-huh.
And I think, through all intents, it was his father along with the jock out of Philadelphia, the Geeter, right.
The Geeter with the Heater.
Yeah, that got me.
Jerry Blavitt.
That got them to recognize or pull me in.
Wow.
Because none of my records, I mean, the records were in came along in the doo-wop era, just at the end of the doo-wop era.
Right.
But I was never doo-wop. As a matter of fact, then what we did, like when you had a single hit.
Right.
It would push you into albums. They uh-huh. wanted you to be an album artist.
Right.
So if you had a single record, you know, a lot of times there would have be like one, two, three, four, maybe four singles from that one album.
Correct.
But it was amazing to me that man would remember me.
Wow.
From when I was 16 years old, came to New York. And record it.
Yeah, well, you know, he was that way. I mean, TJ, believe it or not, as a young guy, was a DJ, used to do sock hops down in Florida. And, you know, he really didn't know too much. He wasn't that knowledgeable about the doo-wop groups. You know, that was a little before his time and everything else. But he was totally aware of it. He worked his way up. But I will tell you, all things considered about TJ, they came up with a fantastic concept. And not only did they put a lot of groups back on the map, but they started the whole doo-wop era all over again from scratch for the baby boomers who just, you know, ate it up.
It's so funny, yeah, here, and look how big it is in Europe.
In the UK, I know, you know, I talk to Mary all the time. She goes back and forth to the UK all the time, and she, you know, she's big there as well, and they're just eating it up. Oh, yeah. It's funny. You have a picture on your website, and it's you and Mary Wilson and Marvin Gaye, and you ask the question, does anybody know who the fourth lady was in that picture? Do you recall the picture that I'm talking about?
Yes.
I actually sent Mary an email last night, and I said, do you know who that fourth person is?
Well, I met a lady, a lady friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
Says that she knows that girl, and the girl was her hairdresser.
No kidding.
Yeah, and this was backstage at the Coconut Grove.
Uh-huh, that's really interesting. So from Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, you had a few tunes after that that were very big. What was the next one right after that?
Right after that was All of a Sudden My Heart Sings.
Right, great tune.
Your little laugh and half surprise, the starlight gleaming in your eyes, remembering all those little things. All of a sudden my heart sings. All of a sudden my heart sings. When I remember little things, the way you dance and hold me tight, the way you kiss and say goodnight, the crazy things we say and do, the fun it is to be with you. Surprise, the starlight gleaming in your eyes, remembering all those little things.
Is all we need.
Love is all we need, so won't you take me in your arms and love me, love me. Love is all we need, so darling, press me to your heart and love. Love me, love me, love me ever.
Uh-huh.
And then you.
Right.
You. I'm in love with you. You. I could be so true. To someone like you. You. Do. What you ought to do. Take me in your arms, please do. Let me cling to you. We were meant for each other, sure as the heavens above. We were meant for each other, to have, hold and to love. You. There's no one like you. You could make my dreams come true, if you say you love me. We were meant for each other, sure as the heavens above. We were meant for each other, to have, hold and to love. You. There's no one like you. You could make my dreams come. If you say you love me, too. I'm in love with you. Say you love me.
And then take good care of her.
Suppose I ought to say congratulations, for you've won the only girl I'll ever love. But I hurt too much to face the situation. Just take good care. Just to be around her was my greatest pleasure. She was everything my future held in store. So remember, when you take my only treasure, please take good care. Accept it, she loves you more than me. So with my broken heart, I'll bow out gracefully. Please don't send me any wedding invitation. If she's happy, that will be my consolation. So take good care of her. Take good care of her. Take good are mine. Don't want the world to hang on the hole, for fame is not my line. Just want a little band of gold to prove that you are mine. Some sail away to Araby and other lands of mystery, but all the wonders that they see will never tempt me. But till the end of time, there'll be a little band of gold to prove that you are mine. I've never wanted wealth untold, but till the end of you are mine.
Let's talk about Band of Gold for a minute. I met somebody recently down here that was a pro golfer way back.
Right.
And, you know, we just got to talking, and I just very kiddingly said to him, "Did you know Don Cherry?" And he said to me, "I played golf with him on the PGA Tour. He was a fabulous golfer. Not only was he the person who actually was the first to do Band of Gold, which is another fabulous tune, he played golf with Don Cherry." And, you know, I was really tickled by that.
I had in his biography, the guy that was did it, they put me in there as well as doing the remake of Band of Gold.
Right.
And making it a hit all over it again. When I was at Liberty Imperial, they used to call me the Bring 'em Back Alive kid, because every record that I had was done maybe 10, 12 years prior.
Right.
And it was a hit. So that was their theory. Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me.
Right.
All of a sudden, My Heart Sings was a Paul Anka.
Right.
A tune. Take Good Care of Her was a country tune.
Right.
And they were hits. And You was the Ames Brothers.
Right.
Before that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that tune when I was a kid, my father playing it.
Yeah, so that was my MO at Liberty.
That was the bring 'em back alive. That's the Bring 'em Back Alive thing. Well, you know, hey, they're all great tunes. We actually talked previously about a couple of Billy Eckstine tunes. You know, one of them that I recorded, which is You've Changed. I think you should do that tune. I think you would do a fabulous job on that tune. And not too many people know that tune. It's just a great tune.
Yeah, it is. It's a good standard, and
yeah.
Most jazz singers in the early days did that tune.
Right. You know, the other thing about Band of Gold is that it seems like it doesn't have a lot of lyrics, and it seems like it's a little simplistic, but it's a very hard song to capture. It's a very hard song to sing. It's not really easy. You either nail it or you don't. Not everybody could sing that song.
He did it where he had the doo-wop background.
Right.
Wah, 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 wah.
Right.
You know? And we did it, like, kind of straightforward.
Right.
And then when I do it, because it's part of the medley, when I do it on stage,
uh-huh.
Break it down to a total slow ballad.
Right.
And when you do it like that, it's very effective.
It's a fabulous tune. My wife directed me to sing that song, because when I stopped singing, you know, on the road and all of that stuff, and I just started doing stuff in the studio, and I've done a bunch of standards, the ones that I like, and she sat me down and she said to me, "The next tune you're going to record is Band of Gold." And I said, "Oh, really? okay, you know, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, you do a good job of it.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, the thing that I'm proud of in that tune is that I did all the music and all the backgrounds, too. So, you know, I just got carried away in the studio. It's not the Nelson Riddle Orchestra, but it's me on, you know, me on synthesizer, guitar, drums. But it's fun, and it keeps me creative, Mel, you know. I mean, if I can't be creative, I'll just wither away.
The new stuff. Uh-huh. I'm doing. How you like that segue?
Yeah.
I've got the luxury of working with some of the Basie band.
Right. Oh wow.
Clayton Hamilton Jazz Band.
Uh-huh.
And some very very great musicians.
Uh-huh.
And an arranger, John Rodby,
uh-huh.
to be with Johnny Mathis and Barbara Streisand.
Right.
And I mean, it's just. I'm really, really, really excited about the new stuff that I'm doing, as well as the thing that I did just before this called The Heart and Soul of Mel Carter.
Right.
And
tell us a little bit about The Heart and Soul of Mel Carter.
The Heart and Soul of Mel Carter are that song was done, Heart and Soul.
Right.
Has a verse.
Right.
And a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And when you break it down and it's into a very tender, tender ballad.
Right.
And we did it as a ballad with a kind of Miles Davis
uh-huh.
cannonball background.
Right.
With the trombone, the instrumentation. And it is really, really, really good.
I've let a pair of arms enslave me oft times before. But more than just the thrill you gave me, yes, more, much more. Heart and soul, I fell in love with you. Heart and soul, the way a fool would do, madly, because you held me tight and stole a kiss in the night. Heart and soul, I beg to be adored, lost control. And tumbled overboard gladly. That magic night we kissed there in the moon mist. Oh, but your lips were thrilling. They were much too thrilling. Never before were mine so strangely willing. But now I see what one embrace can do. Look at me, it's got me loving you madly. That little kiss you stole held all my heart and soul. What one embrace can do. Just look at me, it's got me loving you. Now
little kiss you stole held on my heart and soul. Held on my heart and soul. Held on my heart and soul.
Wow. These are songs that I grew up with,
uh-huh.
and knew the artists that performed them,
uh-huh.
and decided that I would give my spin on the on these particular tunes.
Wow.
And that they are standard tunes.
Oh yeah,
but they aren't the traditional standard tunes.
Right. Well,
and,
hey, listen, Herbie Cox knew that he wasn't the first one to sing "Heart and Soul."
Mm-hmm.
Everybody played it on the piano for generations.
I always say that it's the second most party song.
Wow.
People sit down to the piano. And,
right.
You know,
right.
Dunky dunky dinky dunky dinky dunk.
Exactly. Right after chopsticks. You know, you
right.
warm up with chopsticks, and then you get right into "Heart and Soul." And then if you're good, you can do a couple of Jerry Lee Lewis tunes.
Uh-huh. I'm just laughing.
Oh, I
as a matter of fact, one of the songs on "Heart and Soul,"
uh-huh.
"It's Too Soon to Know."
Right.
The lady that wrote the song lives in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And she contacted me.
No kidding.
Not only did she write the song, she used to manage Sonny Till and the Orioles.
Wow.
And she said, she told me, I'm not bragging now,
uh-huh.
but she said it's the best version of her song that she's ever heard of in her entire life.
Does she love me? It's too soon to know. Can I believe her when she tells me so? Is she fooling? Is it all a game? Am I fire, or just another flame? A one-sided love will break my heart. She may be just acting or playing a part. If she don't love me, let her tell me so. I can't hold her. If she wants to go, though I'll cry when she's gone, I won't die, I'll live on. If it's so, it's way, way too soon to know. It's way, way too soon to know. If it's so, it's way too soon.
I wonder if this is not
the... Got to be. You know, yeah. I said, you've got to be... Thank you.
I wonder if this is the same lady that was also managing the Ink Spots at one time that lives in Lauderdale.
I don't know.
I can't remember her name. She's elderly, and she's...
Right.
But, you know, it could be. You never know. Well, you know, down here...
I had any of the papers instead. I can tell you her name. But I don't remember it.
Yeah.
I think it starts with a C, the last name.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you and I probably have the same disease.
What is that?
I have acute CRS.
Oh, okay. You can have that by yourself.
Yeah. You know what that is, right?
I've remembered everything up until that particular thing about that song.
Oh, yeah. No, because I said that to Lenny. I said, I have CRS. He says, what's that? I says, can't remember shit. He laughed.
And while we're talking about the heart and soul, new thing is called, the new album is called Mel Carter, The Other Standards.
Right.
And it's like, we're going on
right
in that tradition of the other standard song,
right?
And it's a double entendre there.
Uh-huh.
Well,
oh, absolutely.
It there are many songs and there are a lot of artists now who are coming out who are doing. They're all doing Gershwin. They're
right.
all doing Harold Arlen.
Right.
And these are wonderful. Don't get me wrong. They're wonderful, wonderful.
Right.
And I've got. You know, like a number of albums to prove that. That's what I did in the early days,
right.
All that stuff. But I wanted to explore the other standards. There are things that beautiful, beautiful writing.
Oh, absolutely.
You
I mean,
really tell a story, the melodies and everything like that. And they were hits. And somebody said, oh, I remember that by. Yeah, okay.
Right.
You are.
I hear you. Hey, you know, I did a special, you know, when Eddie Fisher passed away. I never realized that Eddie Fisher had 28 top 10 hits.
Yeah.
Never realized it. I mean, and then I thought back and I started thinking back to when I was a kid and I used to listen to him and I used to say, and I said to myself, oh, my goodness, you know, and then, oh, yeah, and then there's that one and then there's this one, and you know, and you forget. I mean, you know, like how many tunes out of which were so many standards? You know, and you think Sinatra did a lot of those standards and made them immortal. But Eddie Fisher also did almost every one of them in his own way. It was amazing.
Before I went into the my first date in the Coconut Grove here,
uh-huh.
I had to go in and see other artists.
Uh-huh.
And one of the artists I saw was... Eddie Fisher.
Wow.
If I tell you...
He was great.
It was the most exciting...
Wow.
...night that I've ever had, and the most exciting performer. And people say, Eddie Fisher? And
right.
You had to have been there.
Yeah. No, I met him once, and I was like... You know, sometimes you just meet those people. You know, I've been on stage with, you know, like almost everybody, but then there were just some people where you stand there and you go, wow, my heart is... full. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I mean, thinking back, Sam Cooke, I mean, listen.
Sam was just, Sam was incredible.
Now, Sam did the Copa.
Okay, he did the Copa the first time.
Right.
And he failed.
No, I knew that story.
And he was out of, it was just out of his, it wasn't him.
Right.
He went back collectively, and if you knew Sam... You would know he wasn't defeated. He said, I am going to go back, and I'm going to take New York by... And
wow.
He did.
Wow.
He did with that big, with like the Marilyn Monroe...
Right.
...that he had on Times Square
yeah.
and everything.
Yeah.
He went back and he killed.
Oh,
because
yeah.
he did Sam Cooke.
Right.
He wasn't trying to do
right.
Sam doing... Frank, or Sam doing Nat, or Sam doing...
Right, I hear you. What's trying to fit into the mold, or to do what's expected of him. Yeah.
And made them, drew them into him.
Right.
And I mean, it was awesome.
Right.
Awesome.
Now you did the Copa as well.
In New York?
Yeah.
No, I did the... I remember going there, and Alicia Cachi.
Alicia Kashi. I remember her, sure.
Stuck a microphone in my mouth and wanted me to sing with her. She, you know, she was doing stuff during, through in the audience.
Yeah.
Here's a young gentleman who's going to Americana. That's where.
The Americana. Okay, great.
Okay. See, mine works. That she stuck the mic in my face and said,
Alicia,
you know.
Alicia Kashi, I remember her.
The only song that I could think of was my high school song. And she's the goddess. We adore our Hughes. And we love her more and more, our Hughes.
Right.
Oh, we hope to keep her fame. Every kind of game. Oh, praise be to the name Hughes. 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 It was, you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah, because they didn't know what the hell you were singing.
And then you heard blah, 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 all this thunderous applause because everybody said, well, why did he come up with that? That's the only thing that I could think of at
wow.
the moment.
Wow.
Oh.
I know how that is. Sure. Let's go back and talk about Dick Clark a little bit. How was it working with Dick Clark?
Every other night we spent the night on the bus.
Right.
Dick was like the father of us all.
Uh-huh.
A very pleasant man to be with.
Right.
And you have to come out of his comfort zone.
Right.
To be on a bus.
Uh-huh.
And to be in the dressing rooms and the whole thing. You think about that. You
right.
know, like, he was, you got to give him credit.
I hear you.
You really have to give him credit.
Uh-huh.
And there was nobody greater to move a show along, a pack, you know.
Wow.
I mean, Dick had, he was just the master of doing that.
And he started really young. I mean, you know, because there are a lot of stories about Dick Clark of all different flavors told by the masses, told by a lot of the groups that worked for him and with him and whatever. And I always like to ask that question, you know, because I get all different kinds of responses when I ask that question. Because,
well, I don't have any gripes. I just know that he was smart because
right.
the way he signed me up, on the tours that I went,
right.
When a Boy Falls in Love was just beginning to rise on the chart.
Right.
And from When a Boy Falls in Love
right.
to the other hits that I had, this is how it happened. I moved from third in the first half to just before closing
wow.
the first half.
Wow.
And then through the tour, then I was the third act before closing the second half.
Gotcha.
The act that was ahead of me, tell you, was Sonny and Cher and Tom Jones, okay?
Yep.
So the records themselves were moving up the charts, and he signed you up in the beginning when you weren't quite so high on the chart.
Right.
And didn't have to pay you that much money. But, you know, like, if you sold and you could produce, you know, that's how I moved up in those third before closing.
Wow.
Probably would have been able to close, except that you had Tom Jones and you had Sonny and Cher.
Wow. And it must have been an awful lot of fun on those tours. I mean, just hitting the cities and,
And
looking out there and saying, hey, man, these people are here to see me. What could be better than that?
Right. And you had... You had some teenagers. I could give you some stories about the things that happened to me, you know, like on those tours.
Uh-huh.
You know, like...
Fire away.
Well, one of them was... I think it was in Tennessee somewhere. The English invasion was...
Uh-huh.
And they had, you know, the people who had all the haircuts.
Right.
Like the Beatles haircut.
Right.
We were in a restaurant. I had gone out... from the hotel into a restaurant, and there was a waitress who showed up, and she was kind of tipsy.
Right.
And when I came in, and there were this table, I was sitting at a counter. There was this table, and the guy said, "Look at all of those, you know, all them, blah, blah, blah,
right.
you know, the names that he was talking about.
Gotcha.
And, you know, look at them, that hair.
Right.
It was very offensive.
Right.
Right. In the meantime, the restaurant owner had called the police about the waitress.
Uh-huh.
And when I got up to leave and they said some negative things toward me,
uh-huh.
I put his foot out to trip me. Uh-huh. And whatever I had in my hand, I just dropped it all on his head.
Wow.
Time, in comes the police.
Huh.
And they arrested me.
Oh, man.
Because they said I was the one that caused it.
Hey.
And then it went on, taking me down to the station.
Right.
And was getting ready to beat me. They took a gun, stuck it in my mouth.
Oh, man.
It was horrible. And the production manager
right
down and got me out.
Uh-huh.
So that's one incident. Another, there are many incidents that we went through, those kind of things. Because when I got up, I was the kind of artist that liked to explore.
You want to know something? This cop probably has all your records. At this point,
I don't know. You know what?
Uh-huh.
Hold things like that in my mind because I think that would
yeah, it's negative energy.
Me up, and not I would not have been able to grow. I can talk about it now.
Right, I hear you.
And can be very in detailed about it because it's very vivid that I can remember all of those things
right
that did happen. But the point is, it happened. I'm still here.
Right.
And that makes the difference. I have no idea where those people are.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny, too, because when I talked to Mary and I talked to Lala, Lala was telling me a story once, you know, about the Supremes and being on the Dick Clark tour and whatever. And they were stopping in a few of the southern towns. And that stuff, you know, really was a reality even in those days, she said. And they stopped and they were all hungry and they wanted to go to this deli. And it was a sit-down deli. And a few of the performers walked in there, whatever, and then a few of the other performers walked in. And they were told that they couldn't come in and they were escorted out. Mary Wilson was one of them, and she said that Len Barry from the Dovell said, look, I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to get sandwiches for everybody and whatever, and this is nonsense. And he went in, and he brought stuff back. And Diana got off the bus and said, wait a minute, this is not acceptable. I'm Diana Ross. I am going into the deli. She walked down the little steps of the bus, walked down, you know, the path into the deli, whatever, and she said, I'm going in there. She walked in there, and they escorted her out. She said, so.
Well, I will tell you about an incident. I won't give you the owner's name.
Okay.
I won't give you the team.
All right.
Because it's just not important.
Okay.
But here I am, here at this game.
Right.
To sing the national anthem.
Uh-huh.
And we're having, you know, like the supper before you go in, or dinner.
Right.
Before you go in to the auditorium.
Right.
Or, you know, to sing.
Right.
And my manager and I
mm-hmm.
had to sit at a separate table.
Wow.
While the owner and some of the coach and all the other sat at the center. We're not talking about a different table. We're talking about a center table.
I got you.
And we had to stay set up. No, we had, true enough, we had Dawn Wader and the
right.
other. And you know, and I looked at her and I said, you know, this is really ridiculous. I said,
right.
I'm here to sing the national anthem.
Right.
These people here
Duh.
Are not, don't think that I'm good enough to sit at their table.
Right. It's amazing.
I never, ever forgot that.
Right.
And then later on, the owner.
Uh-huh.
Because I got a chance to say that. I got a chance to say how patriotic that I think that you're not.
Oh, wow.
It didn't cost me anything, didn't
That's
do
right.
anything else, but I had to get that out of me.
Wow. That's certainly a life experience, too. I know you've done the national anthem for quite a few clubs. I've done it. I did it for the Yankees and the Mets, and recently did it for the Orioles about a year or two ago because my wife is from Maryland. So, you know, I get that perk by being married to Paulette. So you did something that's very interesting. You actually did what Sammy Davis did, and you played Sport in Life in Porgy and Bess. That must have been great.
That was a highlight for me.
That's a tough role.
With John Green
uh-huh.
conducting. Do you know who John Green is?
I know the name.
He wrote Melancholy Baby.
Wow.
He
Fabulous.
Has, he won, like, I think it was 8 or 9 Oscars.
Wow.
You know, for he was the premier conductor at MGM.
Wow.
And I used to go up to his house to rehearse.
Wow.
And sat in the living room, and he had eight Oscars, eight or nine, on the mantelpiece. And I couldn't get over that. I said, I'm this close, man. And we became, after doing that, he said, you are my, we all had, I guess, other people had come and audition, and he had told me that I was his sport life, and we did it with the San Diego Symphony Orchestra and the Philharmonic Choir, and it was just a joy for him. We became friends. He wore carnations whenever, all the time, and I used to send them, you know, to his house, or whenever he was playing somewhere, I would send them.
Yes. But look at what a charmed life that you've experienced, you know, rubbing elbows and being creative with people that are at the top of the list. It's just a wonderful, and you have to say to yourself after a while, I'm living a charmed life. Look at all these wonderful, wonderful creative people that I've experienced.
I thank God for the life that he has given me each and every day. I thank him for my parents, whom were the best people in the world that God allowed me to be, you know, in their care.
Right.
My mom was my best friend.
And not everybody can say that.
I'll say this. Before my mom, the last year and a half of her life, I got a chance to take care of her the way she has taken care of me all my life.
Wow.
And I get kind of emotional. It was the most rewarding thing that's ever happened to me in my life.
Wow.
And I'm just glad that I got a chance to do that. And not only was it the most rewarding, it was just a very, very happy time. My mom and I could look at each other, and she lost the ability to speak. She lost the ability to walk.
Uh-huh.
She was bedridden.
Right.
But we could look at each other and
communicate, right.
With eye. And
I hear you.
Communicate. And she was, even though she was a very vibrant woman that was just had a lot of love and energy for everybody. When she lost that all of the ability to walk, ability to speak,
right,
and she was, it just eluded out of her.
I got you.
So when the day before she died, or the day.
Uh-huh.
Let's say this. My mom couldn't talk, and I was talking over the phone.
Right.
They were holding. I said, Mom, I'm going to see you. I'll be there. I'll see you on Tuesday.
Right.
Right? Because for the year and a half, I had to stay. I was in Vegas, and I was coming down every other week, or every 3 weeks, I would come down and see, you know, take care of the stuff in my place.
Right.
Then go back up there and live. Right? And I said, I'll see you on Tuesday. And she said, and I said, I love you. And you could hear the thing, and she said, I love you.
I hear you. It's, in other words, that was a major effort.
Those words out.
Uh-huh.
And tore me up, man.
Man, that's beautiful, Mel. Just beautiful. A beautiful story. Let's switch to something lighter if we can. Is it true that you guys locked somebody in a drum case years ago?
I think we started talking about the Dick Clark caravans. We were out there so long that we started doing things dressing each other's costumes. I remember that myself, Tom Jones,
right,
Billy Joe Royal, and I've forgotten the other guy, that we dressed up in the Shirelles.
Right.
we dressed up in their costumes, right. And we would go out on the stage and do their numbers. And then you know, we take some of the. There was a drummer. He was real short, man, and we put him in the bass drum carriage thing, and where he couldn't get out. A lot of little stupid things that you get, you know, just to keep that energy going.
Right.
After you had been out there so long, and then it was bonkers sleeping every other night on the bus.
You wrote some of the tunes that you recorded, which is very interesting because, you know, not only do you have a grip on everything else, but, you know, you also sang some of the tunes that you wrote. Which tunes were those, if you could tell me?
Not most of the tunes, but we did have a few B-sides.
Uh-huh.
That The Richest Man Alive was one that I wrote, and It Blues Her.
Uh-huh.
Run to her side, forget your pride. What good is pride if you lose her? Nothing will go right. There'll be darkness even in daylight. Fortune and fame won't feel the same. You'll feel only pain if you lose her. Life will be lonely and you'll long for your one and only. If you should fall, no one at all to help you walk tall. You lose her. Here I stand all alone. I've reaped the seed that I have sown. Just look at me. What do you see? That's how you'll be if you lose her. Run to her side, forget your pride. What good is pride if you lose her?
Anything about, but several of the B-sides of the records that I did write.
Right.
Did not have the publishing, though.
I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And several of them that I wrote with my ex-manager, Zelda Sands,
right,
wrote Looking for Love.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Well, you know, even now, I'm talking to people and they're saying, well, you know, give me all the tunes that you have that, you know, that aren't out there, and we'll do it 50-50, man. You can have, you know, you get the mechanical license and the writers, and I'll take the publishing because, you know, 50% of nothing is nothing, and 50% of something is something. And I said, well, that's pretty good math, you know, because...
Yeah, I think they like to sell you on that idea, but yeah. It's just like when you go to... certain venues, and
right,
because you're at the venue, they want to charge you, you know, for sale of merchandise.
Yep.
They want to charge you 20% to 50%, depending on where it is.
Right.
And I just say, well, you know, like if you weren't there,
mm-hmm,
okay, then those people wouldn't be there.
That's true.
Why should you have to pay 50% of what of your merchandise to them? So I choose not to,
right.
I choose not to sell.
Oh yeah, you know, I understand too, because you know, we've all been through that. But, you know, I think to myself, I've had a couple of tunes that I think are very movie worthy, and I hear them in certain places and I'll send them out, and a lot of the movie production companies and other places they sell. Well, we don't take anything unsolicited. So unless they're coming from a very, very credible place, they don't even want to listen, even though it's great material. So, you know, there are a few...
Unless you have an attorney.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's another whole...
It costs you to do that.
Right. And another whole thing is that the music lawyers have taken over the business, you know, slowly but surely, and a lot of them are writing themselves in for points. So it's like there are always little fingers in there, you know. I mean, it's interesting how that works. That's why...
You know, they kind of take away all of your bargaining chips.
I know.
And, you know, like in any situation, there's always the back end of the deal.
Right.
That you can make up for in dealing with what you have to deal with initially.
Right.
But I just said that it's, you know, like, no. Why would you do that?
No, I understand.
Not something that you need to be doing. Because they don't do that to everybody.
Right. No, I understand. But you see, there's an ocean between a song that is connected to Mel Carter and a song that's connected to Mike Miller. So I have all of that area to make up. So I need somebody with a little more clout. You know what I mean? Not that I haven't heard some of my good stuff back on the radio, but, you know, nowadays the business is so convoluted that, you know, nobody knows what to do with good music anymore. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, there's supposed to be some stations across the country.
Right.
And around the world that are called playing its classic pop.
Right.
Meaning the stuff that we did that was pop then, because pop now is... not what we were doing.
Exactly right.
Or the Great American Songbook.
Right.
There's another station. I can't think of the other name of the
right.
other station
mm-hmm.
that they have available for that kind of music.
Right.
Now. And they're seeing that people, because of all the, a lot of the younger acts are coming and using songs or from the... 50s and 60s and the classic songs, or there's a market out there for them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and in Florida, I mean, I live in baby boomer heaven
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they just can't get enough of the music that they love and the music they grew up with.
Right.
I have it on very good authority though, that within 5 or 6 years, internet radio and Wi-Fi radio will be king, and that the reason is there'll be many more choices. You'll buy a new car, and the computer in that car will run the car. It'll give you all of these features, you know, such as navigation and whatever, but it'll also give you internet and Wi-Fi radio, whereas if you want to listen to jazz, you'll dial up jazz, and it'll give you 800 choices from around the world, all Wi-Fi, the same as you do with your Blu-ray machine when you go to Netflix, or the same, you know, as you do on the internet when you're going to look for tunes on the internet. So there'll be many more choices available, and probably terrestrial radio and Sirius will probably fall by the wayside. But, of course, you know, that's just technology. I noticed that even Sirius is starting to play the same songs on Monday as they do on Tuesday at 4 o'clock. You know, you can set your watch by the Ricky Nelson tune that they're playing at 4:30. That's starting to happen.
Because I just got a thing, you know, like CD Baby tells you how to get music in rotation.
Correct.
On the net.
Right.
You know, so the radio stations and the radio programs
right.
that are coming on the net are being more popular, and they're going to figure out a way to kind of charge you too. You know that.
Yeah. They're working. Well, the government has, they now have Sound Exchange, which is coming after the internet stations, but they want to hit the internet stations up even harder than they do terrestrial radio. It's because they don't have a grip on it. And they're trying to figure out desperately how to get a grip on it, because it's right now it's like newfound territory.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get phone calls all the time. Okay, what are you playing? What are you doing? My basic station, my home station, you know, they pay big bucks in order to protect the rights of artists and writers and such. But there are a lot of rogue internet stations that don't do that. I know I go on to 365 Radio as well, Worldwide Oldies. Those are all situations that are well protected. But there are an awful lot of rogue internet stations, and they're just blasting away. You know, so I mean, like, you're right. It's totally non-regulated at this point. You know, interesting. You know, and the world is changing very fast right now.
Yes, it is, and yes, technology changes as you breathe.
Oh, absolutely right. So tell me, what's your favorite Mel Carter tune?
Usually it's the one I'm working on right now.
Ah, see, that's an interesting answer. In other words, you know, it's be in the moment. I got you.
Yeah, even when you're going, when you're in the studio and you're recording right now, because you're in that moment and the creativity is happening right then.
What a great answer! You're living it. I understand that totally. Well, you know, in line with that, what's your favorite Mel Carter tune to sing on stage? I'm sure there's one that you've made. You know, okay, this is my moment on stage. And I'm not sure it's the one we're thinking of.
Not on stage. You know, it's the... I'll explain this like this. It's the first two songs, and the first two songs, you know, the school that I'm from, you have an opener.
Right.
Then the second song is really the opener.
Gotcha.
You have the attention getter.
Right.
Then the opener.
Yeah, the first one says hello.
And...
yeah.
When the first take and then the second song is when you have the audience there, right in your hand.
Right.
That's usually the most favorite song. Then that's a setup for the for you to break it down and then the ballad to come.
Right.
And when you have the it's the curve.
Uh huh.
And when the curve happens, just before the curve is going down, that song that stuck right there is the favorite song.
Wow.
I know that's kind of like hard for, you know, the average person to understand.
Right, unless you've been up there, because it is, unless you've been on that stage, you can't explain that experience to anybody.
Right. And that's what happens, and then you don't ever let, it doesn't go all the way down.
Right.
But it's hard to. It goes right that little curve.
Right.
And that little curve evens itself out, and then you're going on from there.
Well, you know as well as I do that you know, you do your show, you finish the show, you get off stage. Maybe there's another act coming behind you, but you know, once you get up to that peak, you don't come down until a couple hours later, until you've gone to the diner and had your piece of pie or your cup of coffee or whatever it is. Then you start coming down because, you know, it's when you turn that switch and become Mel Carter on stage, you're really, it's really a high that you can't explain to people, you know.
And it's the closer.
Right.
And the closer, you know, because you leave... that's when you leave them at a high.
Right.
You know? And I learned a long time ago, always leave them wanting more.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand. You know, you might want to
say... a lot of people who are out there, and I see that stay...
right.
You know,
they stay too long.
Have I stayed at the dance too long?
Right.
Or have I stayed at the party too long?
Right.
And sometimes, you know, you hit them then, raise them up, bring them down, and
bring
them back up again, and you stay out there too long. And that's not... a thing to do.
Yeah, I've been to shows where I've seen that. It's like, enough already. Next. You know. I hear you.
I just say, you love, you know, you have to love what you're doing. I mean, no, you don't have to. There's a lot of people who do it by rote. But if you love what you're doing, and you've gone and seen some of the masters, the way they work.
Right.
And it's just incredible. And it's a joy to watch and see and pull from the experience of it all.
Oh, I hear you. You started to tell me about one experience where there was a mistaken situation in the diner and you wound up going into the police station and whatever, whatever. And then you kind of referred to another situation as far as singing and acting, and you said in between you had a bad experience with some police. Was that the same experience, or was that something that was a totally different scenario?
It was something totally different that happened here in L.A.
Because I thought about that, and it actually, you know, I thought about what you had said to me, and I started thinking about it, and I said to myself, you know, I don't know what it could have been. And then I said, well, maybe I'll ask you about it. Possibly you don't want to share that with me. And, you know.
No, it was the, it didn't happen. That incident happened here in L.A., and I was a victim of cop brutality.
Unbelievable.
Chokehold.
Huh.
And the chokehold put me out of I think I said that to you, put me
right.
out of commission. I couldn't sing.
Unbelievable.
I had no top. No, nothing. It almost
goodness.
Crushed my larynx.
Oh, man.
And so the way for me to make a living was that's what me going into the acting. I could speak,
right.
but I couldn't sing.
Right.
But I couldn't speak for a long time. And I had to go to therapy. I had to go to a hypnotist.
Wow.
To bring me back.
Wow.
And we sued the police department of Los Angeles. 7 years.
Unbelievable.
And it was, you know, up and back with the offers and offers. The thing about it, as a pop star,
right?
Okay, you don't have bookings 5 years from now,
right?
Opera stars do,
right?
And certain other people. So you couldn't evaluate what you could have lost.
Right, I understand.
There were two record contracts that were canceled, but you couldn't estimate what it could have been.
I hear you.
It'd only be registered from what was already done, you know. So it was a long time to recuperate.
No, I hear you, but, you know, my feeling is not to make light of it. I would have been singing every verse of Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me that I could get out. And, you know, it would have been, hey, guys, it's me. Look at me, it's me.
They didn't, at this point, that particular night, they didn't care.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay.
This was a cop who didn't care.
No kidding.
And some of the dialogue that went on was, like, you know, we need to send them all back to Africa.
Okay. So it was one of those, and there were actually a couple of movies that depicted that kind of behavior from cops, over the last couple of years, you know, where people don't, you know, after they hear the story, they hardly believe that that could happen.
Well,
something
when
like that.
You put all the, you know, the variables together. I was driving an XKE.
Uh-huh.
Which was the cop resented. We had just come from a party, and the way I was dressed, that was a resentment. And then having to work on that particular night and being transferred from one area to another area.
Right.
It was a whole lot of stuff. And all
I see, whole scenario.
Trial, and even the two other officers
right.
not show up.
Uh-huh.
But
wow.
The point is, in order for me to win, mm-hmm. I had to rehearse, like between my attorney, who was a young guy,
right,
and myself, because people believe the police.
I understand.
Over you,
right.
You know, and the fact that I was black only
right.
made it, didn't matter who I was, made it the fact that I was black, and you had to act and convince.
I don't think.
Even with the right information on my side,
right.
I still had to conduct myself as a certain, you know, I couldn't get enraged.
I understand.
Indignant. I couldn't, you know, I was coached.
Right. What was the year?
You know what? I don't even remember.
Okay, great. So let's not beat it to death, but
I
will, you know, I don't think that's something that anybody knows. I certainly had no concept that anything like that ever happened. And it's a terrible story, but it's an eye-opening story. It shows you that it could happen. And I'm
well, Jimmy Rogers, you know, that's why he
right.
had Bill Clayton his head.
Right.
And then there was another actor, a young actor that was beaten to death in the back of a police car.
Unbelievable.
It was quite a number of things that happened
right.
with this police department out here. And I'm sure many other police departments around the country. But, you know, it happened.
Well,
and it was part of my life, and that part, you know,
right.
I talk about it and remember it.
Right.
It just took me a long, and the good thing about it is that it pushed me into another area of entertainment.
Right. Well, you know what they say about the one door closing and the one door opening, but it's just amazing, you know, metaphysically speaking, and I'm a pretty metaphysical guy, you know, up really has no meaning without down. So in order to appreciate all the stuff that is in the up position, you know, I guess you have to go through some of the down periods in your life in order to understand
appreciate.
And appreciate. You know, I mean, if they did the movie and when they do the movie,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that will be in the movie, you know, so to speak.
Or the book.
And or the book.
But, right. I mean, you know, like, it's not one of those things that has to be, that I would spend that much time in an interview talking
right.
about.
No, I understand.
It happened.
But I, you know, from my point of view, in order for people to understand a little bit about you and really get some, you know, some insight into what you've been through in your life,
can I mention some of the things that's on my, you know, that I have available on CSP Records?
Absolutely.
Okay,
tell
we
me.
Have a single called Raise the World.
Right.
Sing Louder Than the Gun.
Raise the world, voice is one. Sing louder than the gun. Raise the world's voice is one.
It addresses all the issues that are happening in the world. It's a timely song in the world today.
Right.
And especially the wars. And somewhere in the world, there's always a war. There's always been since umpteen beginning of time.
That's correct.
And we address that issue, my writing partner and I. There is a gospel album that was nominated for a Grammy in 84, and we remixed and digitized and put it on a CD.
Right.
And that's on call Willing.
I'm willing to do anything I can. I'm willing to say yes when I don't understand. Willing when there's a price that must be paid. Willing to do anything that you say. Willing for the pain.
Then we had the Heart and Soul of Mel Carter.
Right.
Mel Carter Live in Hollywood, which is an hour 10-minute show that we did live here in Los Angeles at the Roosevelt Theater.
Mr. Nat King Cole. Unforgettable.
that's what you are. Unforgettable, though near or far. Like a song of love that clings to me, how the thought of you does things to me. Never before has someone been in every way. And forevermore, that's how you stay. That's why, darling, it's so incredible. Someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too. Please, won't you think that I am? Mr. Sam Cooke, darling, you sent me. I know that you sent me. Every time I meet you, you sent me. Honest you do, honest you do, honest you do. Whoa, whoa. You thrill me. Kill me, you thrill me. Honest you do, honest you do, honest you do. At first I thought it was infatuation, but ooh, it's lasted so long. Now I find myself wanting to marry you and take you home. I know, I know, I know. You thrill me. When I'm with you, you send me, baby. You send me. Honest you do, honest you do, honest you do. Mr. Jesse Belvin, if you should awake in the still of the night, please have no fear. I'll be there. You know I care. Please give your love to me, dear only. Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams. Sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright, and bring you closer to me, closer and closer and closer. Before you go, there's just one thing I want to know. Is your love still warm for me? Or has it just grown cold? Why can't I fall in love till I don't give a damn? And maybe then I'll know what kind of fool
Right, and so there's so much Mel Carter material available.
Yeah, there's a DVD, DVD CD package that's available out there, and you can hear them snippets of from my site, or go to cdbaby.com and
right.
Hear all the rest of it. But you know, those are the kind of things. The best of Mel Carter is not. I mean, it's available, but it's not on my label.
Right. And the other thing. That I noticed is that you've been on almost every popular TV show that we could possibly name, including having been on The Dating Game 4 times.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that must have been fun.
It was a lot of fun because I got to ask the girls the question rather than them ask me, you know.
Yeah, but that's part of Americana, The Dating Game. I mean, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. We, a lot of the Dick Clark Caravan of Stars.
Right.
The Dick Clark shows, I've done many of those. Every time there was a record release, there was a show out here called Hollywood A Go-Go.
Right.
Then there was a Dick Clark show that was on the beach.
Right.
Every musical show that there was, and I've done the Tonight Show, I've done the Joey Bishop show. My mom and I did the Joey Bishop show one night.
Right.
And we danced on there.
Well, and that was also with Regis Philbin.
Right, he was the second banana.
Right
on the show.
A lot of people don't know that, but yeah. I'm talking about you know Dick Van Dyke's show and Sanford and Son and Good Times and Love American Style and on and on and on and on.
And
so you know you
remember I spent a year and a half on a soap called Santa Barbara.
Right, which was a great soap. I mean, you know, and of course you know that I'm friendly with Lenny Welch for many years, and he's a good friend of yours, and Lenny was on General Hospital. So between the two of you guys, you know, a great situation is to have Lenny Welch and Mel Carter in the same show, and I know that you work a lot with Lenny, so, you know, that's something that I'd love to see.
We've done a show together.
Right.
And I've written the show, a Broadway type show, and I'm still writing the music, some more music for it. And we had a chance to do it in Vegas.
Well,
excerpts from the show. And it was good. Lenny and I were, that's my buddy.
Hi, this is Lenny Welch, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
I can see where you would work beautifully together because, you know, Lenny is everything that you are. He's good looking. He's talented. He sings up a storm. He's spiritual. He's intelligent. And, you know, I could see that blend in a minute because I love talking to Lenny and Lenny is really funny as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all good. As a matter of fact, every time I get out to California with Paulette because we have a daughter that's in Newport Beach, Costa Mesa area. You know, Lenny and I always threaten to get together, except that, you know, usually he's on a cruise or doing something else, but eventually we're going to do that. So
sure.
Maybe we'll just all get together and we'll go to a really good Italian restaurant and we'll talk about life. That would
okay.
be a great thing. You know. All right. Well, once again, Mel, it's been wonderful spending time with you, and we'll talk again soon. And I thank you very, very much.
Did I get everything I wanted to say? Oh, no, I'm only kidding you.
I don't know. Well, you know.
I'm only kidding you, man.
That's really pretty funny, Mel. It's really funny. You reversed it.
Normally somebody would say, did you get everything that you wanted? I said, no, did I get everything that I wanted?
it's a continuous process. So, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's been a fabulous, fabulous career. And so how can people get in touch with you, Mel, if they want to just say something nice or they want to actually put you in a big, big show?
Okay, you can come to the website and see www.mel-carter.com, okay? The email thing is melcarter@earthlink.net.
Right.
And if you come to the site, you can see all the various things that I do, as the memorabilia, the drawings, the poetry, all of this stuff that I do.
Absolutely, and all of the CDs are on there, and a few snippets from each CD that they can listen to. And we're really looking forward to the new CD, because I want to hear those standards. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you've done this tune, but I've recorded this tune, but I'll Be Seeing You is one of my favorite tunes. Have you ever recorded that one?
No, I haven't recorded that.
I think that's a good one to do. Now I'm picking material for you, Mel.
The single from the album is going to be Crying in the Chapel.
Wow. Fabulous. Another Orioles tune.
Right. Yeah. And it's that kind of flavor. It's not the Elvis flavor.
Yeah. Mel, thank you so much for spending time with me on the Harmony Street Show. I enjoyed the time that I spent with you in shows. I've enjoyed talking to you, and I wish you so much success in the future, because you're like Cupid, man. When you step on stage, you turn into Cupid. You just exude love, and, you know, like I said, your audience has a love affair with you, and you have a love affair with them. So thank you so much for being a friend, and thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Mike. Thank you for having me, and thank you, audience, for me, too.
Right, and we'll do it again. Thank you, man.
Okay.
I love you, man. Thank you.
Take care, man.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Be my love, for no one else can end this yearning, this need that you and you alone create. Just fill my arms the way you filled my dreams, the dreams that you inspire with every sweet desire. Be my love, and with your kisses set me burning. One kiss is all I need to see my hand in hand, we'll find love's promise. There'll be no one but you for me, eternally. If you all I need to seal my fate, and hand in hand we'll find love's promised land. There'll be no one but you for me, eternally. If you
It seems we've stood and talked like this before. We looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when. The clothes you are wearing are the clothes that you wore. The smile you were smiling then, but I can't remember where or when. Some things that happen for the first time seem to be happening again. And so it seems that we have met before and laughed before and loved before, but who knows where or when. It seems we've stood and talked like this before. We looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when. The clothes you are wearing are the clothes that you wore. That smile you were smiling then, but I can't remember where or when. Some things that happen for the first time seem to be happening again and again and again. And so it seems that we have met before and laughed before and loved before. A letter of goodbye. It's no secret you'll feel better if you cry. When waking from a bad dream, don't you sometimes think it's real? But it's only false emotions that you feel. If your heartaches seem to hang around, your blues keeps getting bluer with each song, just remember sunshine can be found behind a cloudy sky. So let your hair down and go right on and cry. If your heartaches seem to hang around too long and you're blue, getting blue with these songs, remember the sunshine can be found behind the cloudy sky. So let your hair down and go right on and cry. For me to say this after the way that you broke my heart, but I still love you, although we are apart. It may sound silly to say I miss you, I must confess that this is true. I want it only 'cause no one else will do. The day we quarreled and you left me before you walked out through the door, I wanted to tell you how much I'd miss you, but my pride wouldn't let me tell you. So it may sound silly, but if you phone me and ask forgiveness for doing me wrong, oh so wrong, it may sound sad, but I'd be waiting with open
that we used to go. his heart and found the road was free and clear to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. Open up your heart, recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found on Harmony Street. Open up your heart, recall how